This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Black farmers in the United States are few and far between. In North Carolina, only about 2,000 black farmers. Dwindling numbers make it even more important to capture the living histories of the people who fish and harvest our food. Stories like the Simmons family in Brunswick County.
As much as is possible, we are masters of our own domain. That's the thing that I love.
We do the work and it comes to us. And we own some of the land that we're doing it on.
Melody Hunter-Pillion is a PhD student in public history at NC State University. She collected voices of farmers and fishers in the southeastern tip of North Carolina. Her oral history project explores the pressures on farmers in the face of the loss of land and the ever-present threat of climate change. Melody, welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you here.
Good to be here. And I was so excited when I just heard those voices for the first time being broadcast out to the public, those folks sharing their stories. And it sounds so good. It's even more exciting.
Well, what motivated you to collect those voices in the first place?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I thought I was going to be doing a story about climate change. Last year, I went to Puerto Rico, had interviewed some resource managers there after Hurricane Maria, and also they were experiencing extreme drought. And I thought, I want to interview people in eastern North Carolina, farmers particularly, fishermen about that. And then I found out it was more than just climate change. It's more history. It's more about oral traditions and how people persevere and survive through different challenges that are more than just climate change. So it became many different things.
Well, one of the challenges is just staying on the land. I mean, we talked in the last segment about the loss of farmers in general in the United States, and even steeper loss in the number of black farmers in the United States and North Carolina. What accounts for some of that?
That's right. So in 1921, in every seven farmers in America were African-American farmers. And the latest USDA census report that came out in April of this year showed that that was down to just 1.3% of all farmers in America. Our African-American farmers, and part of it was Jim Crow. After enslavement and people were set free, Jim Crow laws made it very difficult for African-Americans to own land. Those African-Americans who did own land and were able to farm found it very difficult to garner support from the federal government. The USDA had loans, but they were administered by usually local Southern folk who did not deal fairly. And so it was not a fair playing ground for African-American farmers. But what you see through that, part of that, is that they were able to come together as much as they could to keep the land between themselves. Another problem that you had with land loss was the migration of African-Americans during Jim Crow, because they went to the North or to the Midwest for what they thought might be better opportunities. And then just legally, African-Americans did not have the resources to hold on to their land. So the way that they were passing the land down was more of a personal thing to family members rather than a legal thing. So there was no clear title, no clear wills, and that made it easier for other people to then take those lands.
So you talked to the people who are still there. You focused on Brunswick County. How many black farmers out there?
Not very many. There are about 63 black farmers in Brunswick County. But I think what's even more perhaps disturbing, if I can use that word, is that there are only four black farmers under the age of 35 in Brunswick County. And so one of the families I interviewed, the Simmons family, three of Cleve Simmons' sons are under the age of 35. They represent just about all there is of that handful of young black farmers. So it's the future. When you think about that, it's hard to imagine the future of black farmers when you don't have a population of young black farmers in Brunswick County anymore, according to the numbers.
Well, and you did talk to them, and it's a family that has worked to preserve the land and for whom preservation is important. And they love to talk about the stories. I want to play a clip here from your oral history just to give us a sense of this family and their connection to the land.
The most important one, never plant on an east wind. Good
yeah,
Lord.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Never plant.
What does that mean?
It says so in the Bible, the east wind brings a man no good. If you plant on the east wind, it'll kill everything.
It'll come up, but it will not produce. And that's from way, way, way biblical days.
Right. Now, let's talk a little bit more about that and the fact that so many, there's a lot of science in farming, and yet not always.
That's right. So these men are telling their own story. It's a very distinct and unique story, a very American story, too, very North Carolina story. And what I love about that, it really gets to the heart of oral history and oral traditions, is that these stories are perishable. And once they're gone, they're just gone. You can't get them back. And that is why it is so important to capture those stories now, share those stories. And what do those stories say as sort of micro histories? What do they say about a larger history of the American South and just of America in general, just by knowing the experience of these farmers and their families and how they have shared different experiences and learn through these experiences by sharing these stories together. So they still count on those old stories that they brought down through from their grandparents or great-grandparents. And everyone I interviewed connected their larger story to their slave ancestors. They were all able to point to when my people came to this part of Brunswick County. And that's a part of their story, is the history. It's very present today.
Well, and you can hear in their voices the joy that they feel just in conveying this story and recalling, right, these things, yes, that they've heard. And it's over and over again. When we said, don't plant in the East, everybody's heard that a million times. I heard that in his voice. I could hear the million times he heard that, even though I've never heard it before in my life. And this, I think, is some of the beauty of oral history, is that it conveys the power to that family of knowing this and having the opportunity to talk to somebody like you and archiving it and recalling these stories.
Right, and sharing it with others. And I think it resonates with a lot of people. So this family has that story. Other families, like you say, you've heard this story before on the East Wind. And because it does have these biblical roots and connections to other families, have shared this story. So I think that many Southerners, not just Black Southerners, but white Southerners, people who are Native American, Lumbee Indians who farm in that area too, and in other areas that are nearby, can relate to that story. And it resonates when we hear it through these very real voices that have these very distinct dialects from Eastern North Carolina, which I think are rich and beautiful to listen to.
And it's very clear that there's a commitment to staying on the land. I want to hear another clip from the Simmons family talking about their commitment to keep farming and to maintain ownership of the land. You'll also hear the voice of a neighbor, Lewis Dozier.
You know, when folks, well, you ain't gonna get nothing out of farming. Farming's hard work. It's this, it's that.
Somebody gotta do it or you don't eat.
Exactly. Right. And of course you wanna weed the negative out as much as you can, but passing along good oral traditions is something that's key and essential to building and keeping a good community.
As much as it's possible, we are masters of our own domain. That's the thing that I love.
We do the work and it comes to us. And we own some of the land that we're doing it on. And actually, we're looking to buy land, not for development, but to keep it pure for farming.
That was the key. When I was growing up, families were found. We all went to church together. We all ate together. We all farmed together, communities and families. And that, I think, was one of the things that kept us together. And we were able to save the land as long as we could.
Simmons family from Brunswick County, North Carolina. Family is Father Cleve, sons Troy, Justin, and Brian. Their neighbor, Lewis Dozier, also included. Their story is featured in a new oral history project from NC State Public History PhD student Melody Hunter-Pillion. Melody's going to share her work at the Black Communities Conference on September 9th through the 11th at the Carolina Theater in Durham. And, of course, we've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. So you can hear the commitment that they have. But the fact is, one of the reasons that there aren't many farmers left is a lot of people leave. They leave voluntarily because it's hard work. And, you know, it doesn't always pay.
No, that's right. And so what you have is this really compelling narrative that these farmers can tell through their own experience. So they are telling the experience. They make meaning out of this very unique experience that they're having. And in doing so, they are really getting at the heart of a complex history as well, a complex history that strings itself into the present. And that is with African-American farmers in particular, there's this sort of dichotomy that you have, that land is a contested space, has been historically for a long time. Land can be a conduit or an avenue to independence and freedom historically at one time. But land also has these characterizations in the African-American community, agriculture does, with subjugation because of enslavement. So what do you do with this complex sort of thing that's going on? And what these farmers are saying is, this is independence. Owning land is owning something real. Making something productive out of the land is a real contribution, and that you can make this living at it. As small farmers, you may have to do other things as well, but that's a history too that Louis Dozier, if you come to the Black Communities Conference and listen to the full podcast, will talk about how his great-grandparents worked in the sawmills and his grandfather worked in the sawmills so that they could continue to be farmers. So what are the things that you do to persevere in the face of how you feel about farming, that farming is a respectable occupation. Farming is something that makes a contribution to American society. And farming is something that does give you independence and power in many ways, and that is important. But they have to work together in figuring out how to keep the land.
Well, independence, but that was the last part. I think something else that was also part of this, independence and community.
That's right.
Interdependence on a community, yes, and keeps that community strong.
Yeah, the strength of the community is what helps every individual to be stronger, and where they can really organize and make a difference.
What were some of the other themes that emerged as you collected these oral histories?
Oh, I would say, especially with Harry Bryant, the theme of, we talked about community, but the huge theme of family, which I think is often sometimes left out of the African-American narrative, that families are strong, that families really do stick together, that they depend on each other, and that they do share these ideas and narratives of resilience that help the next generation, and how important the family is in that link in the entire community, that we have to have that family strength.
Harry talked to you about that strength and the strength that families bring and the resilience that grows from it. But he's also concerned, as we heard in our last segment, you know, people on the land are their first responders when it comes to the environment, and are environmentalists themselves. And Harry Bryant talked to you about that and about what he's seen in recent years and how much more difficult it's become because of climate change.
We just got just a few acres in the Loch Nafale estuaries. We can get oysters anymore or clams. Just a few acres. Whenever we used to could start off, I don't know how many hundred acres it was, the whole bay, we could fish the whole bay with clams and oysters.
And we should point out, Harry Bryant, of course, is a shrimper, right?
He is. Don't you love his dialect? Oh, his accent is just so genuine. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's the other thing. When you collect oral histories in North Carolina, it's just endless poetry, whatever is being said. Retired shrimper, mm-hmm, Harry Bryant from Brunswick County, North Carolina. And you talked about Louis Dozier. I want to play this clip, too, and then come back to you for more of what you learned. But
Sure. Again,
Louis Dozier is noticing the changes, recent changes, mm-hmm, and radical changes in the environment when it comes to just trying to get the tractor out.
At this time of the year, now this is early March, we will be tilling to plant. At the moment, we can't because of the water table. It's wet. And it's still wet, and I did a little tilling a couple of weeks ago, but for the most part, we're behind as far as tilling for spring planting. And in this area, the water table's high, and there's so much moisture in the soil until it's just nowhere for it to go.
Louis Dozier from Brunswick County, one of the African-American farmers featured in the new Oral History Project, from NC State Public History PhD student Melody Hunter-Pillion. Melody is going to share her work at the Black Communities Conference on September 9th through the 11th at the Carolina Theater in Durham. How much of this have you shared, and how much of it have you gotten out so other people can hear it?
Yeah, you know what? This is the first time I've shared it. So I'm really excited about that, because what a great venue to be able to share this. And I'm still working on editing and making it smoother and better. This is my first effort at a podcast, and I'm really excited about what sound brings to being able to tell stories and to resonate with people. And one of the things I want to say about Louis Dozier and the other gentleman that I interviewed when it comes to climate change, they work intimately with the land and with water. They see the changes, they know. Now, one thing they'll always tell you is that they're not scientists. They don't necessarily call it climate change, but what they do tell you is we know our land, we know the water, we know the things around us, and we are seeing a change. We know that. What are things that we can do? We can't necessarily stop climate change, but we can sort of mitigate how we are going about how we plant or how we fish. Harry Bryant is a retired trimper, so he's no longer doing that now. He sold his boat, the Morning Light, to someone else. But one of the things he did say is that, you know, that he, the young man that he sold his shrimp boat to, he's a young white man, and they stay very much connected, respect each other a great deal, is that they're finding the shrimp now in Virginia, in the Chesapeake, that normally would not be there, the size that they are. I think they call them 20 count or, you know, and I don't know, fishermen know these terms. But they're, and even though he's excited that, wow, you can do, but he also knows that that shouldn't be. That's a little odd. That's naturally not normally what we see. So it's a problem.
And as you say, these are stories that are, these are people who are, you know, very deeply seated and rooted in an oral tradition. Stories get handed down. In other words, these are folks who are used to change. They've heard change over generations. Mm-hmm. This is something that's radically different, it seems to me, and that's a little bit of what we're hearing. I've got about 30 seconds left. What do you hope people will take away from this?
What I hope people will take away, that again, just how much this is a truly distinctively American story. There's something we can learn about it, whether you live in Eastern North Carolina, Western North Carolina, or anywhere else in the country. This is about struggle, perseverance, and telling those stories to each other so that you can support each other and learn through history, perishable history.
Melody Hunter-Pillion is a PhD student in public history at NC State University. She gathered stories from African-American farmers and fishers for a new oral history project. She's going to share her work at the Black Communities Conference on September 9th through the 11th at the Carolina Theater in Durham. And of course, we have more information on the subject itself. We've got some photos, links to photos, and a website that you can find out more if you go to our website first, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Hullab-Moorman. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.